like that, it was because of the access point there, a little bit of a bottleneck there, and I was actually on time due to the access point. So what we're saying here in terms of the boat is just to start off. I just want to say, you know, it's actually a good thing that we start this process all over again, honourable members. I'm saying that because, as our acting DJ has already indicated, we're starting afresh. Now we have to have time to incorporate the recommendations made by the SASCOP Committee of Inquiry. So hence, it helps us to enhance the product. We've captured it already, and as a matter of fact, we, as we draw to a close, heading to the SASCOP Committee of Inquiry's fulfillment of those recommendations, which is, you know, about from 1 week from now at their AGM, they will have to make certain decisions, and then that will endorse various issues. Some of the issues we could not, of those recommendations, we could not capture in the amendment. Why so? Because it's structural pertaining to SASCOP. In other words, SASCOP is not a statutory body. SASCOP is a non-profit organization, and therefore is not a statutory body. It's not actually described the way of its structures in the bill itself. So hence, you cannot now, when there's structural changes being recommended by the SASCOP Committee of Inquiry, you cannot contain that in the non-board. So hence, we work together with SASCOP in the drafting process pertaining to those structural, you know, issues which needs to be contained in their constitution. So just to enlighten you pertaining to that. Okay, firstly, Chairperson, honourable members, the bill seeks, amongst others, to delete amendments to certain definitions. The bill seeks to provide for the promotion and development of sport arbitration, to establish the sport arbitration tribunal to resolve disputes in sport arbitration bodies, and also to provide for the procedures relative to bidding and hosting of international sport arbitration. The bill also provides for the powers for the Minister to appoint a committee of inquiry relating to maladministration, corruption in sport and recreation, and also to regulate the recruitment of foreign sportspersons and the accreditation of the sports agents, and also to provide for offences and penalties. We created a lot of bite here and teeth, because previously, currently the Act hasn't got sufficient teeth and sufficient bite. So we've actually amended that process. Then also, the objects of the draft bill encompasses the following: to clarify the role and responsibilities of all stakeholders, meaning that SASCOP, department, and also the Sports and Recreation Federations, and also national federations. The bill makes provisions for the development of coaching framework guidelines, makes provisions to regulate sport and recreation agencies, and provide for the recognition of sport and recreation bodies. Here, the bill furthermore empowers the minister to intervene in sports disputes by establishing a committee of inquiry, and also it establishes the sports arbitration tribunal to deal with disputes and appeals. Now, when it comes to the summary of the draft bill, it goes clause by clause. The following stand out. Clause 1 provides for the insertion of new definitions such as blood committee. For instance, there is a new committee of inquiry which falls under the definition of committee. National colors, national emblem, recreation activity, sports and recreation agents. And then also, the law provides for the substitution of the definition of the national federation for the following definition: a national governing body of a code of sport in the Republic with affiliated members of not less than 5 provinces of the 9. Recognized as the twofold recognition. It's twofold recognition here in order for you to say that you, your body is a national federation. Firstly, it must, your body must be recognized as part of the Federation of South Africa as the only authority for the administration and control of the relative code of sport in the Republic. And then secondly, you as a national federation, if you want to be legitimately called that, you must be recognized by your relevant international authority. So as a twofold minister here, it's subject to the fulfillment of those two relations. Plus two of law, in essence, provides for the development guidelines for the promotion of high performance, whereas clause 2 in bracket 7 and in bracket 8 deal with the functions of the SASCOC to be performed by him, and the penalties to be considered by the minister with regard to SASCOC after providing SASCOC with an opportunity to respond to the written notice. In other words, RBI rule. Also, conforming to the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act. Now, should SASCOC, therefore, after that notice, still be in due to respond to the notice, or fail to improve its performance satisfactorily, the minister may then penalize SASCOC accordingly. Clause 3 provides for the publication of the policy objectives to be achieved by Sport and Recreation Service. SASCOC and Sport and Recreation Bodies in the Government Gazette. You will note that the definition of Sport and Recreation Bodies is a broad definition because national federations are even included under Sport and Recreation Bodies. So hence, this clause provides details so that everybody can see. If you publish something in the Government Gazette, it's for public consumption, and it also indicates what you're going to do, what's your objectives, and then also you can be taken to task whether you have achieved it or not. Then clause 4 provides for the replacement of the words national federation with the words sport and recreation bodies where appropriate. Already indicated, the national federation definition is a very focused definition, whereas sport and recreation bodies is broader, but it includes the national federation. The insertion then also of a new section 6, brackets 6A and in brackets 2B, which respectively stipulate that sport and recreation bodies must, firstly, fulfill the obligations imposed by his relevant international controlling bodies and B, adhere to specific statutory directives from a compliance and adherence perspective. You can clearly see that we're not interfering now in the business of international, the international codes with regard to those bodies. We're just saying that you must ensure that you fulfill that nexus in between yourself as a sport and recreation body and your international body. Your whatever is at stake pertaining to things that you must do and not do, but ensure that you do both. That's all we're going to say there. And then also the clause provides for the minister to determine and allocate responsibilities to national federations by way of a notice in the government. Again, we formalize this. In other words, it's not a secret. It's published, it's crystallized in cement, so to speak, because once it's in Government Gazette, those responsibilities are added to those of national federations. Obviously, the minister will, he will not do this at hand. He will consult with the first and foremost as well. It's not the draconian approach. So then also clause 4 deals with the amendments which in essence represent a review of the recruitment process of foreign sports persons and include the vetting and verification of the criminal records of potential recruited sports persons. We've ascertained that in some instances there are people coming to South Africa under the camouflage of a foreign sports person, and they have a very bad record, criminal, sexually offenders. You know, and we would try to eradicate that. And you actually will see later on, you make it a very stringent decision that you, as a national sport, a national federation, or a sport recreation body, if you fail to do this verification and vetting process, you will be trouble when it comes to, for instance, to penalties and offenses and fines and imprisonment, as a matter of fact. Clause 5 inserts a new section 6A and 6B, respectively, which deal with, firstly, the compulsory registering and licensing of sport recreation agents, as described. In other words, there's going to be regulations pertaining to this. And then also B, the discretionary power of the DG of sport and recreation to recognize sport and recreation bodies and to issue recognition certificates to those that have applied successfully in terms of criteria stipulated by regulations to this effect, provided that such recognition may also be withdrawn if warranted for reason. Chairperson and honorable members, you recall that we currently have regulations, but those regulations are actually being put on hold because it's subject to the promulgation of this. We want to create sufficient empowering provisions so that when it trickles down to those regulations, it's not uncalled for, that those regulations can actually be, in other words, can be respected and can be executed properly. So this is the reason why we've built up a far more greater empowering provisions pertaining to the recognition part. Then Clause 7 provides for the following amendments. It substitutes the word must and may insofar as the provision of physical facility functions. We don't say, Chairperson and honorable members, we say, yes, we can build physical facilities subject to funds being available. So therefore the word must is now replaced with may because it's subject to that condition. Then also beneficiaries of such facilities must now, amongst others, ensure that sport and recreation activities takes precedence over any other activities insofar as the usage of sport and recreation facilities are concerned. So in other words, if you are a beneficiary of soccer, you must focus on soccer. You know, when you receive money, when you receive a facility, built with money being provided for by government, you must ensure the beneficiary of that facility that soccer in this instance will take precedence so far as your activities of uses of that facility. The minister may from time to time publish norms and standards for the building of new sports facilities. Clause 7 provides for the inspection and monitoring of newly constructed facilities by sport and recreational facilities inspectors who can either be a person, an employer of the public service, or a registered or licensed sport and recreation agent appointed by the minister to perform specific functions assigned to them as the fact. There's going to be regulations that need to be drafted before and concurrent to the enactment of this piece of legislation. Those regulations must actually be drafted in such a manner that with the timeline for the enactment of the piece of legislation, the amendment bill, is actually on the cards. Then at the same time, those regulations should be ready so that they can be promulgated. See, or else you can't just start now when the act is already promulgated, then only start with those regulations. And that's another point I just want to make. Clause 8 deals with the protection of vulnerable groups as to participate in sport and recreation and protected against sexual abuse and speaks for itself. Clause 9 empowers the minister to solely establish and appoint the National College Board and appoint members as discussed. You will recall, Chairperson Hammond, the Act, the National Sport and Recreation Act, the Principal Act, it states that the SASPOR, with the concurrence of the minister, must establish the National College Board. In other words, they currently, they're actually utilizing the draft regulations which the department some time ago, we never promulgated those regulations, but they utilized those regulations in order to issue CALS. So in the meantime, is even the SASCO committee inquiry has given SASCO some leeway to do it in the meantime, subject to the clause 10 provides for the insertion of new subsections race efficiency perspective and hosting of international sports recreational events provision to host such events without the written approval of the minister. We found that, you know, in some cases this is a very serious and problematic issue. So we build in also serious provisions that deals with this. If you do not conform to this, there's the escalation of things that can go wrong, and it started off by you not applying in terms of the act, which is the amendment law, and its regulations, the hosting and billing regulations. You're in serious trouble when it comes to offences and penalties. Then also, clause 10 provides for the establishment of a regulatory authority for combat sport and fitness industry and its functioning perspective. Chairperson, honourable members, you will recall. At one stage, well, I'll not say Jefferson, you will recall, at one stage we were actually on a road, embarking on a path to create two pieces of legislation. The South African Combat Sport Regulatory Authority Act, and then also the Fitness Industry Regulatory Authority Act. We've deviated from that. We said, no, it's going to cost a lot of money and it's a lot of unnecessary effort. Why? We can actually build sufficient empowering provisions in this piece of legislation, which we did. And stemming from that, there will be regulations that can regulate this. So there's two. You will see there's going to be two regulatory authorities. Clause 11 empowers the minister with a discretionary power to institute a committee of inquiry in terms of specific principles of effort to investigate any matter that may bring sport and recreational activity into dispute. You will recall that the current act provides for the minister, he can intervene in such matters when it brings sport or recreational activity into dispute. In this case, the minister escalates it now to committee of inquiry. Now, obviously, previously from experience, we know, for instance, in cricket, Joba committee of inquiry, we experience a serious contestation pertaining to, can you really appoint such a committee of inquiry? We did it under the auspices, under the authority of, for instance, Treasury Regulation 12. Which is what, in terms of SASCO, we've also did accordingly in terms of Treasury regulation as well. Now, to eradicate all the confusion pertaining to this, we've actually stated now, we've catered for a definition of a committee of inquiry and the minister's powers pertaining to that, because there's no power currently for the minister in terms of the principal act to appoint such a committee inquiry. Then also clause 12 provides for the establishment and functions of a sport arbitration tribunal consisting of at least 5 members appointed by the minister to hear disputes in sport and to decide on appeals made in terms of section 13 of the Act. In other words, it's a body of review. It's a body of appeal as well. It can take anything on the review. If a sport or recreation body, comes to a certain conclusion pertaining to a matter, whether it's negative or positive, this particular tribunal can intervene. It can take this matter under review and by investigating it, and then also make a ruling pertaining to this. And also, in terms of the powers of SASCO, has now been totally diverted. SASCO used to perform this on. And we have problems with SASCO fulfilling that. So we're now creating this ad hoc basis body to assist, to expedite these matters as and when they do arise. Okay? So SASCO, of course, in terms of its constitution, it still has certain powers to take it because it feels set up to be exhausted in terms of for its own members. But when it comes to other bodies, as long as the act is not being amended by this one, yes, the road to resolve will still be in terms of Section 30, in brackets 2, of the National Sport and Recreation Act. But when this amendment bill comes into force, you'll find a situation that, this tribunal will take over the role of SASCO. In other words, the sport and recreation body is a member of SASCO, and they're unhappy with something that SASCO has done. It can be dealt with immediately by the sports arbitration process. Clause 12 furthermore provides for offences in contravention of the Principal Act and for the delegation of powers. Now, this is a very important one because, Jefferson, honourable members, we have a look at other legislation, and for instance, when it comes to the committee being required that the minister appoints in terms of this law, if you disrupt that committee inquiry, you can face a fine or imprisonment equivalent to at least 1 year. So, it just shows you that there's sufficient powers to make sure that you do not intervene with the activities. If you disrupt the proceedings of such a committee, just example, you can face the penalty as well. And then also some other, the maximum. Now this is a little bit harsh, but the maximum. It depends on the gravity, the seriousness, and the escalation of what has been caused as a result of something that you did or did not do. It can escalate to 20 years in prison, a fine, or imprisonment. Equivalent to 20 years in prison. Okay, it's harsh. We need to still sort this out. As the bill progresses and matures, we will have a look at that again. But we need to get something going to get people to be afraid not to do the wrong things, right? To do the right things. This is why we actually go for the big one here. But as I say, it's a little bit harsh. We might scale it down, but we feel that it's and also, for instance, if you contravene by not adhering to the hosting and bidding regulations, if you don't get the appropriate approvals of SASCOC as well as the minister, and something escalates to the effect that you host such an event, and then in terms of the SASRIA, there's a big problem now, and it escalates even further. So it's a domino effect. That means that the seriousness and gravity of your mistake is going to have a rippling effect on you, and that's why we want to have that 20 years in place. It depends. It warrants the merits of the penalty will be weighed against what you've done and what the escalation of what you should have done or should not have done have actually brought about. Then clause 30 makes provision for the inclusion of regulations that can be made by the minister. This is now additions. With regard to school sport development programs, sport and recreation agents, because this is a new institution, and training of sports coaches. Clause 14 and 15 provides for the amendment of the long title and also the act that also contains the short title. I think adequately our act in these years already refer to the current status of the bill and why we need to start fresh. And with that, I think this is the end of my presentation. Thank you very much, Jefferson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr.
Keith-Jones.
I'm happy when we engage you guys in a discussion now. Thank you so much. Honorable members, as we have heard that we're thinking by now that this proposed bill were supposed to be put in Parliament as it was started last year, but as we are hearing that it was redrafted. When honourable members, we discovered the gaps as a former Parliament on this SASRIA, that the department itself has got a gap. You can't have a board that is going to go and try to sort after the incidents. And then the former committee called all stakeholders involved after the stampede. And we're thinking by this year that all is well, but through the background, what he is telling us, maybe they wanted that when we're passing this bill, it must be one that is presented to you. Can we engage in the discussion? I thank you. Honourable Father, Honourable Mhlongo, Honourable Mahlengosi, Honourable Boy, Honourable Maromane, Honourable Sierra, in that order.
Good morning, Chairperson, and I would like to thank the presenter for the presentation on the draft. Chairperson, I looked through it and I actually just got one query, and that was on this tribunal that would be established. And I would like to know, I see that there are certain qualifications that people will have to have, being able to be part of the tribunal, or a judge, ex-judge, etc., not part of a political party, etc. I get all this. I need to understand this tribunal. If it's, for instance, this tribunal of five people, will they be able to handle all the cases? Where are they going to be established? Are they going to travel around? Will they be able to actually handle all the cases? The second part is, what budget has been put aside, and what is the cost implication of such a tribunal to this department? And then the third one, the outcomes of this tribunal, does this go direct to the minister? Or what is the situation after the tribunal has got an outcome on each case? What happens to it as from there? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Sub. Honourable Mhlongo.
Thank you. We welcome the presentation. I wanted to address some of the questions that are the massive consultations in our own. And those consultations, do you have any time frame there for us? Because one of the things is the time that we have to consult in Chief of Council. I can imagine about a time frame where our own council is going to take the only time frame that we have to do. Another issue that I wanted to find out is having the teaching using his or her direction. That's why I have a problem with that. The sporting code speech was applied to the court night, even previously. Sometimes the teacher will just say, his own discretion. I think that's why we have to say that. I'm not actually on that one. There's this feeling, sporting code, very important. They seem tough. And they wanted this to be legal. It has been taken some time because the bigger speeches did not support them. And they've applied, I'm saying that certain things where they want to apply, but the teaching must be his or her discretion. I think that's the case. Another issue, the power of the minister. think it's good, and I think we have to discuss even that that issue that I think. I think when we tend to give sports to be directed by politicians, it's no more of national interest. And the history taught us here in South Africa, for example, I think the issue of Morocco clearly states to me as a person that it was a political decision, not based on sport, especially if there are policies in place. Yes, it's questionable what is a subcut policy of selection committee. I think those are my issues for now, and I think let's get a timetable for us to engage this and consultation issues. And what I wanted to find out, why are we doing this? Because I think provided the AGM of SASCOC approved other issues, why are we doing it for SASCOC? Maybe I'm putting it there, but I'm saying it's like they're putting us, there's a gun behind us. If they don't approve it next month or this month in November or in December, something is going to happen. If I understand you, those are my comments for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Masongo.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I almost said have the same questions as to the powers given to minister soccer. Let me just talk about soccer. Soccer has become a sole property of the fans and club members. So now it becomes problematic if everything would be bounced back to the minister and the minister being the one that will direct the cause and the direction of how things should be. I think he's been given too much power. And on clause 4, I don't know whether I heard you correctly, sir, that it looks like the words for national federation changing to sport and education board is like broader. Are we not locking ourselves into the world bodies that we find ourselves now being controlled by outside forces rather than we are looking at how we can run our federation and other. And this imprisonment sentence is a bit harsh. I don't know. As you said, that they'll be. It's more like a scary tactic, whatever. But it seems very, very harsh. And for now, let me. So thank you, Chair.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. My first point was covered by Honorable Mukongo with regard to the time frames and so on. The second issue is the, and you know very well, DG, that I've got too much interest on this one. Cross 13 on school sports. Can you please elaborate how is the minister going to make sure that that thing gets implemented? Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm covered. I wanted to check on the issue of time.
Thanks, Chair. And let me also welcome the presentation. As a way of being educated, Chair, my take is the last slide. in terms of process is what is going to direct us. So for now, therefore, am I correct to say for now it's just a brief? We're still going to engage in debate after the cabinet has approved and so on and so on and so on. And so on. Engaging the legal unit of the parliament and so on and so on. So that we don't waste time there. But if that is my understanding, if my understanding is correct, then I'm fine. But having said that, maybe because some of us are engaging with this thing for the first time, my question would be, what is the problem statement? Why the need to have this bill? And if possible, just to elaborate, I think it touches on those colleagues who asked about the time frames, just to address us on the process, so that we don't finish the term again without approving the bill. And I was also, of course it's covered, I was also going to be worried about developing a bill we're reacting to what SASCOC is doing that can be clarified. But just to ask, because last time when we were engaging with SAFMA, they were indicating that in terms of world governing body FIFA, they don't want government to interfere in their area. Now, in terms of what you are saying here, minister will do this, minister will appoint this, and so on for sports. Won't that affect, or how do we deal with the issue of the concern of SAFA? And in the last slide that I referred to, there's indication that there were queries raised by the legal unit of parliament. Maybe for my own benefit, or for our own benefit, because almost all of us are new, if we can be given those queries. Another concern is that it might be on the periphery. We're still saying Department of Sport and Recreation. Are we not recognizing this major? I'm mindful that is an amendment, but are we not recognizing that we're now Department of Sport and Culture? Attached to that, I see us using sport and sports interchangeably. Which one is correct? We are sport and recreation. Somewhere we are sport, arts and culture. Somewhere we are sport and recreation. If we can, because this is a legal document ultimately, if we can be well advised there. And I take when we discuss, because my other question was going to be the definition of the vulnerable groups, as you said. But I think when we discuss clause by clause at some stage, we'll be able to look at definitions. But I think the important thing for now, again, just to emphasize the issue of process and time frames. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I might have missed it, but I just want to get clarity on clause 1. Will both the Protea and the Springbok emblem be still applicable in future under the national colours and national emblem? And then I also want to know what roles and responsibilities of SASCOC will be duplicated. It seems as if a lot of their responsibilities and roles will be taken over. I just want to get clarity on that. And also, if the tribunal will not be perceived as interference from government, because I think most of the members here have that idea. And then also, what? How do we compare with sports bodies abroad or on an international level? And how do you think they will perceive these amendments, and what implications do you think these amendments might have on how we are perceived from an international perspective? Thank you.
Thank you for the honorable presenting. I also have some few questions. I wanted to check, how will this bill assist athletes like such as Kasasme? And then another question is like one, what procedure is currently in place when it comes to binding and hosting of international events, and why is there a need for such amendment? But as this bill has Section 76, we don't hear the process of going to the provinces, and we only hear about SASCOC. SASCOC, which we know that is having huge problems, that we don't know that as a department and the committee, are we looking at their constitution, SASCOC itself? Because as I'm sitting here, there are abnormal things that in that constitution is going on. I know as I'm sitting here that on the 23rd of this month, on my birthday, I've been invited to their AGM, annual general meeting, and then I know when this bill was presented in the last term that the legal fraternity of parliament queried a lot, and they were said as the past committee, I'm suspecting even now as this committee, are you now in the same path? Have you been sitting down? Because we've said we are just a committee. They can't legal vice of the department and the legal vice of the parliament come and argue with us. They must go and consult each other. So I'm suspecting that we need time frames, and we don't see us not passing this bill, but seemingly, as we have said, you're starting from scratch. We need to hear about public hearings. When you talk of federations, whilst we have already suffered that they are having their own understanding, let alone that they were happy when we called all the federations that they are involved, your FIFA, your PSL, Commission of Police, because it was upon that we've seen that even us as a department, we have a gap. But I need that we must fast track this bill. This is the first day that we are putting to us, but time frames is very important. And if you still remember, Section 76 bills are including ENCOP, whilst ENCOP has got their own cycles that we must not miss. Immediately that you are not forwarding us the program of looking at this, but surely it's not late. This is the first time that you are coming to present, but we need time frames. We need to know from today, what are you going to do? I thank you. If you will take any of the questions, there's a time that you can respond. Acting DG and Mr. Gideon, but not Gideon, Sam.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you, honourable members, for all the relevant questions that you've asked. Madam Chair, I think a lot of the Chair and colleagues have articulated the fact that this is the first time that we've come here with this presentation. And I think we were addressing ourselves, Madam Chair, to what was expected of us for this committee to come in. Present on pending legislation. So, Madam Chair, this is our work in progress with this piece of legislation. We understand, yes, there is an urgency for us to fast track and to make sure that we have timelines so that we address the fact that this piece of legislation must be completed in this term. If you look at the documents, Madam Chair, I don't know whether it's too optimistic, but we set ourselves a time frame of completing this legislation, hopefully by the end of the financial year 2021, mindful of the fact that there's a lot of consultation that needs to be done. Madam Chair, as indicated initially, this has been through Parliament, but we've now also seen an opportunity to relook at the piece of legislation and see how then we cover other things as well, which we have been doing. So this process of finalizing this legislation, as I said, is work in progress. It's been internal quite a lot. Internally, we've been looking at it ourselves first before we take it out to other entities. And it is a coincidence that SASCOC had to come in and mention, as I say, the most important entity. But I think it is informed by the fact that we've been busy with the Committee of Inquiry, we've been busy with them also ensuring that they comply with the recommendations. But it's in no way giving them more attention than anyone else. So Madam Chair, from a point of the bill, it is a very, very first time that we're coming here. It's a very, very draft. A copy of the document. There's a lot of work that still needs to be done. We have a system in place. There is a checklist that the legal services has in place of what's going to happen next. It's just a matter of putting in the dates, etc., of when this will happen, or tentatively to say how long it will take as well. So that is work in progress as well. To respond then directly to some of the questions, Madam Chair, the consultation, yes, we will go and consult with, internally, we will take it to our sports federations, we also have focus groups that we take this out to, we call them to meetings, etc., we work with them, we send out the documents and then we call them in so that they can make their inputs as well. We cannot take any documents to Cabinet without a consultative process, because then it will just be thrown back to us, because Cabinet also wants to make sure that everyone who has an interest in the legislation or in sport in general has had an opportunity to look at it. So we will ensure that it's as wide and as inclusive as possible, so that everyone has an opportunity to make their inputs. In addition, Madam Chair, it will go through the clusters, the different clusters. It will go through then the Cabinet, and obviously come through to the NCOP and to the Portfolio Committee as well. So those processes definitely will take place. Madam Chair, with regard to the issue of the power of the minister. Madam Chair, I think we need to be mindful that the minister is the custodian of sport in the country. So as much as there is autonomy of your sports federations and other organizations who will say government should not interfere, when things go wrong, everybody looks to the minister. At any time, if the Springboks or the Bafana Bafana is not doing well, yes, there's the SAFAs and the SARUs and everyone else, but everyone looks to the Minister of Sport and Recreation to say, Minister, what are you doing? And a lot of the times, they're not cognizant of the minister's powers in the legislation. And in its present form, the legislation doesn't give the minister enough liberty, should I say, liberty to deal with some of these issues. And some of it is not even interference. It's the minister coming in just to assist, to mediate, to intervene so that there is a solution. So those are the things I think we're looking at for the minister to come in and say, if you want to say, these are the powers you're giving the minister. Madam Chair, we also find in recent times that there are things where sometimes you're waiting for a process for the federations, because if you look at any dispute or anything that is a conflict within an organization, within the sports federation, they have to address themselves through their own constitution first in terms of the dispute resolution mechanisms. So the federation themselves have to deal with it. And if they don't deal with it sufficiently, then aggrieved parties can then take it to SASCOC. SASCOC then has to deal with it. And if SASCOC doesn't deal with it sufficiently, or there's an impasse and they can no longer deal with it, then it comes to the minister. And then the minister then has to deal with it. And hence the mechanism of the tribunal, etc., comes in. So it's a resort that after everything else is exhausted, and then the minister must deal with it. And the issue of the tribunal is to fast track it, because, Madam Chair, if you look at some of these disputes, they are going on for years, for many, many years. And by the time it's resolved, we find some of the times the people who are involved in it are no longer involved in the sport. Some of them have died. And some of them have really been shortchanged, you know, at the end of the day. So obviously, you can't now sit back and say, now you don't do anything about it. So there has to be some empowering legislation that addresses those issues about the powers of the minister. And those are the things that we have now found in the present legislation, and we are addressing it now in the new legislation. The issue of the tribunal, and the people, the qualifications, etc., legal services will speak through to that. The issue of the DG's discretion in terms of recognition. Madam Chair, if you look at the recognition of sport and recreation bodies, there is a criteria. It's a criteria, and the DG's discretion is an operational matter. There's criteria in place, and if they meet the criteria, there shouldn't be any reason why the recognition shouldn't be afforded to those sports bodies. So it's just an operational thing that the DG has the discretion. Otherwise, it means then if you're going to give the minister the power to do this here, then all of these issues will then have to wait for the minister. So the fact that there is a regulation, there is criteria, it's an operational matter for the DG then to approve the recognition of sports bodies. The terminology of the national federation, Madam Chair, if you look at the national federation, it's a very restrictive term. It only speaks to football, netball, rugby, tennis, athletics, cricket, and so on. So those federations. But if you look at within sport, if you're looking at sport and recreation bodies, you have a whole body of the non-profit organizations. You have other NGOs, etc., that are there, that are also, you can recognize their work, the work that they do. And they are like strategic partners to government that you need to also recognize in terms of the legislation. And I think the legal will also talk about that. So those are the things. With the issue of imprisonment, etc., I think we're putting it here. I think obviously the consultative process that we go through will indicate to us, is it too harsh? Should we now look at some alternative, etc.? But obviously, those are things that we can talk to. full support, Madam Chair. You know, this is an area, there's collaboration, there's ownership of school sport by different, by the Department of Basic Education, there's provinces, there's the schools themselves, there's school governing bodies. There are many role players with regard to school sport. So I think within the Act, there is a specific area that we are also covering in that, and Gideon will speak about that as well. And thanks, I think the member who spoke about the last slide, I think that's something that we I indicated that, you know, we've come here now to present, but obviously there's a process that we need to follow, and I think we'll articulate and provide greater detail to the committee in writing when we leave here. I think for now it's a bit premature for us to actually say by which time we will complete it, but we will be able to give you a broad timeline to try and meet the 2021 deadline as well. And thanks, we note, yes, we do need to start with the problem statement. And as I indicated, Madam Chair, you know, yes, we identified a problem. And hence, that then informed the changes that we need to make that in the legislation. And I think we'll speak through that as well, Gideon, as well. The legal unit of Parliament, Gideon, I think there was lots of discussion even after we presented with the legal, and Gideon will present that as well. Using sport and sports interchangeably. Madam Chair, I know we've always speak of ourselves as being Sport and Recreation South Africa. But in the new administration, when the minister was announced as the minister, he was announced as the Minister of Sports, Arts and Culture. And we've had lots of discussion internally as well to say, now should the department be the Department of Sports, Arts and Culture, or rather sport, because if you're looking internationally, the terminology for sport, and I think even legal did an opinion of whether it should be sport or sports. But I think the long and short of it, Madam Chair, is the minister was announced and sworn in as the Minister of Sports with an S. And we were told that if you want to change it, then we must send the minister back to be sworn in again as the Minister of Sport. So we couldn't interfere in that process. So we've made peace with the fact that it's the Ministry of Sports, Arts and Culture. But I think if you look at international practice of sport and sports, sport is the more commonly known phenomenon. And as I said, legal was even given the task to go and look at it and give us an opinion around that matter of sport or sports. The emblem and the roles of SASCOC, etc. I think, you know, the Protea is our official, it's official colors. When you're given national colors, you're given the Proteas. I know historically there was an emotional issue around the Springboks, and both the Springboks and the Proteas were used together. But even Saru will now tell you that, you know what, we don't use the Springboks, we are the Proteas. So I think we very much aware of, yes, we call the team the Springboks. It has an intellectual property to it, etc. But our national colors, when we refer to our national teams are the Proteas. But that's legal, you can also speak about that as well. How does the bill assist athletes like Caster Semenya? Madam Chair, I think it's something that we will consider as well. I don't think we've put that into the details into the bill as well, but thanks for sharing that with us as well. We will consider that. And then international events, the procedures in place. Madam Chair, we do have a bidding for and hosting of international sporting events regulations. And I think we're trying to strengthen that because we realize a lot of the times everybody wants to host an event. They go and they raise their hands to say we want to host it without thinking of the implications for the country. For any federation, they don't realize the financial implications. And then government has to become a crisis saver. And that is quite, it's quite a challenge, Madam Chair, because when people go out to go and bid for it, There is a document that they need to follow. There is also different, approvals that they must get. It must be endorsed by the sports confederations as well. They must indicate how they're going to fund it, firstly on their own, and if they require any government funding, what is that? To what extent do they require government funding? We find a lot of times that some of the federations don't do that, and government then becomes a cry for favor. And hence we using this legislation to see how do we strengthen that as well. Kiryan, can I, Madam Chair, with your permission, can we ask legal to actually speak through any of the other questions as well?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members. Pertaining to the tribunal, question is, you know, can they handle all the cases? Has the budget been put aside sufficiently and effectively for its operations? Also, the outcomes need to be reported to the minister. Firstly, yes, they will have to operate by. They must have at least five members. That is what the draft one says. They will perform their functions on an ad hoc basis. In other words, they can determine, for instance, if disputes are not so pertinent, they can let them build up, they can group them together to say because they are not so pertinent, urgent. They can park them a bit. Then the urgent ones, like the urgent application in court, we need to deal with that first and foremost. So they will have to plan according to that. And then, obviously, my take is about that is, in order for them to do their business, they will have to, on an ad hoc basis, also move around the country. Because in local, you'll have to find yourself, in order to ascertain certain facts as a tribunal, you might find yourself, no, I would like to grasp certain evidence from the situation in local at the place where it actually is happened. It depends on what the facts of the matter is. A budget, yes, that must be put aside. We have not, we have just made an estimation, I think, but that we need to think that through a bit. But definitely, because it depends on how many cases there will be, how many disputes, how many resolvement of disputes will they be involved with. They are an independent body, so therefore we would like to keep them independent. If they now need to report to the minister, you know, the current act as its structure is that when it's trickled down from a national sport and recreation body who has a dispute to SASCOC, then eventually, I remember there's a reporting mechanism, just to say that the dispute is now with SASCOC. The dispute has now been identified by the sporting recreation body. It says, once you have a dispute, report to the minister. SASCOC, once you receive the dispute, report to the minister. Now, seeing that you have an independent body here, we can rethink this matter. Because if it's going to be independent, why must they now give a report of each and every matter? But we can build in, for instance, on an annual basis that they need to just give a report, to a reflecting of what they've done, not to each and every time. So on that basis, I think we can deal with that. But we need to rethink this even more so. Then, yes, the consultation process with regard to time frame, Chairperson has alluded to, we will draft time frames and submit to you as we perceive the effect of fulfilling them will be for your scrutiny and approval and for the members to consider as well. Then, of course, yes, when it comes to recognition of a sport and recreation body, there's a bit of a subjectivity that was raised by Mr. Klombo. And where you say that, you know, you have a DG, he now decides whether, you know, he's going to recognize or not. But remember, there's criteria. There's criteria that binds him pertaining to a specific decision that he's taken. So if he fails to operate or advice is not being given to him or her pertaining to the criteria, because remember, the DG, when he takes a decision like that, he will gather in information to be furnished to him by officials of the department. It's not a standalone matter. So therefore, there's a build-up of this case. So eventually, when he takes the decision, it would be in accordance with motivations, compliance with the Act, compliance with the criteria, and taking a decision that is in the best interest of this woman. So, but I'm parking this a bit, because we can, as I said, we're only in the starting blocks now, thanks to this legislation. So we can rethink this part as well, maybe building something there to actually create less subjectivity and more objectivity. I think that's an important point that you raised. And then also, our acting DG has already addressed the powers of the minister that are allegedly too much. And, then the definition of, for instance, of national federation opposed to sports and recreation federation. Well, the two are separate, but the one is inclusive of also the other, because it's got a broader perspective, broader scope. So therefore, you're not going to, when you have both of them, you're not going to discard one and then just focus on the other. Both of them are equally important for the purpose of the legislation. Then, imprisonment to us, yeah, definitely we'll have to look at that, but that's just for a starter. School sport. Remember, when it comes to schools, there's only one reference in this particular legislation. Draft legislation pertaining to school sport. And that is where there's the draft bill makes a reference to new regulations to be drafted. Firstly, with regard to school sport development programs, that's the only reference that you find with regard to school sport, specifically schools in the particular draft. Why must we have this bill? I think the bill itself, the content of it, spells out why we must have the bill. We must have the bill because you can clearly see we've got our ducks in a row, because we have identified many instances where the current bill is flawed and needs to be beefed up, enhanced, improved to the betterment of all parties involved in this. Okay, we've spoken about time frames. Why are we developing a bull around SASCOC? This is not the case. As a matter of fact, SASCOC is being ousted. A lot of its entrusted powers have now been diluted because, for instance, the National Sport and Recreation, the College Board, for instance. And as a matter of fact, they have actually been brought to task as pertaining, stemming from the SASCOC Committee of Inquiry, the recommendations, which have now been built in here. So therefore, they are really on the red carpet, so to speak, to ensure that they walk on that carpet only and not well otherwise. So what we're saying there is, no, the interference of the state law advisor of parliament. But remember, we had some serious queries were raised by the legal advisor of parliament last year. And I must say, in the beginning, we thought, she's wrong. But when we actually went back to our drawing board, we could see that she's got a point. Because she said, for instance, when it comes to your bill, there's a lot of references that impacts. Remember, this is a bill which strengthens national, it's a national governing legislation. Eh? So it maintains essential standards for sport and recreation, etc. Then again, there's some issues that have a bearing on provincial and local. And then she raised that point. She actually quoted the Constitution and said, no, you need to consult. The question was also raised, did you consult pertinently with provincial and local government? We must. So definitely, when we now going to consult with parties, I just want to say, there's a submission on the way to the minister, whereby he's requested for approvals pertaining to consultation process, to the state law advisor for certification purposes, the cluster meetings, the SAYAS unit, all have been incorporated in that submission. It's on his way to him, and once he has approved it, then we're going to consult all of our players, meaning that provincial and local government will be one of them. So definitely, yes, we will mind that. Okay, sports and sport, we have discussed that. Matthias Klingmark, we've discussed that. The roles of SASCOC have definitely been captured in the particular legislation, as actually indicated by the SASCOC committee inquiry. And another question was raised, as this tribunal, is it not going to be an interference in sport from a international perspective? We say no, because why? This is the tribunal will deal with domestic disputes within the Republic, emanating from in the Republic. Hence, it might have international bearings, but then again, that tribunal will have to stay aloof, not to interfere in the international, you know, requirements as projected in the constitutions of those bodies that relate to the body that they investigate in South Africa. So in other words, they have to stay clear. There's a demarcation line which you mustn't trespass. So they will be mindful of that. Then when it comes to Caster Semenya, Chair, yes, we'll have to look at that as well. But I think also the SAIDS Amendment can also be utilized, SAIDS Amendment, South African Institute. That's actually more proper conduit for this particular recommendation as opposed to the National Sport Federation. But we definitely can look into that. Procedures in place for the hosting and bidding, why is it now again? I think our acting DJ is already alluded to that. Just enhance and to strengthen the building further, to create sufficient and effective empowering provisions so that there's no pros and cons about, you know, what we can do in these terms, because it's so important that particular piece part of the law that we felt that rather, you know, address it sufficiently and effectively in the manner in which we did. Then also there's no references to clause 6, there's no references to provinces. I can buy into that. We need to revisit that, because remember we said also provinces will be and local will be consulted. So therefore you need to be consistent. When you do it there, you need to look at this clause 6 and to provide for that as well. And then also yes, you quite rightly look at it as abnormal things in the SASCOC constitution. But they need to, we have worked together with them. I'm part of the compliance task team, so as we go along, we actually also work together with the legal committee of SASCOC, which will draft these provisions in order to eradicate and to align with the recommendations of the SASCOC committee. So in that way, we try to, you know, just to enhance the constitution of SASCOC to lead as a integrity, not like we also went, just to add, we know after having the discussions, as a matter of fact, we had interactions by email with the legal advisor of Parliament. And then subsequent to that, we actually also went to the state law advisors. They concurred with your legal advisor of Parliament, so hence there's no question about it. Public hearings and fast track of the ball, yes, we will do so, Chairperson, and we will provide you with the timelines in due course for your consideration and approval. And hopefully, if not, please help me.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, yes, my colleague was talking on the emblem of sports. And yes, as I say, I've been in Parliament since 2009 when I was on the Select Committee. Now, I know that was already then quite a warm debate on emblems. I don't know what happened since then because I then went to other committees. But I know there was a member of the ANC in 2016 or something that had an issue that wanted the Springbok emblem off. And, you know, Chairperson, because of apartheid, etc., but there was a thing that was, at that stage, it was clearly said that obviously the national flower is the protea and the national animal is the Springbok itself. And it's been a brand since actually 1891. Now, the National Party only started governing in 1948, which is 107 years, like after the Springbok was there. So the Springbok as a national, let's say, symbol, has been there long before the National Party could even be thinking of that, or refer to either this, I almost said idiots, but these guys were. But in any case, so for us now, where our Springboks have just won the World Cup, I've never ever heard, and I've been playing rugby since I can remember, and I'm still playing for the parliamentary rugby team at this eager age, young age that I still have. But the Springboks, the name of the Springboks, the brand of the Springbok, I must say, Chairperson, you know, this is one thing that we've seen throughout this whole tour, where everyone was asking, where is the Springbok? Because you talk about the Springboks, but you see the protea on the chest. And then they said, listen, just look on the shoulder. Now, Chairperson, I've got a problem with that. If your national team that the world champions have been the world champions for three times, that's known as the Springboks worldwide, and definitely not because of some apartheid idiot that was in power at many years ago. I just don't see it. Why do then a brand that's been established for long past, or long before even apartheid was available, to even think of going, making away from it? Because if that is a national animal and that's been the brand for so many years, why try to get rid of it? Because that will actually cause a stirring debate, and I can tell you that I can assure you of, that I will be the first person that will fight that debate hand and teeth. Because, not because of anything, luckily I've never been in the National Party, but it was even long before then. And this is one thing that I want to know, because I've never ever seen on any paper, white paper or anything, that the Springbok as an emblem is taken away. I tried to get hold of my previous colleague that was on this committee, but he said to me, the previous minister, they made a joke about it in the portfolio committee, but it never went through. So I would just like to know, what is the stance on this, please, Chairperson?
Thank you, Chair. Talking about the inserting of subsection in empowering provision. What could have been the insufficient, in your opinion, that could have disempowered Netball South Africa from being given a space to host the World Cup by most of the regions except Cape Town? In your opinion, what could have been very much insufficient in them? Thank you, that's all. Thank you, Chair.
I wanted to comment on the national colour for For example, you know, two supposed couple of years and they launch women colour. So woman with a given green colour. Something and Bapana Bapana. I'm saying, let me withdraw, let's discuss stuff by itself, and then what is the purpose of changing color? And when we get buy-in from communities or from South Africa, at the end of the day, I think I'll concur with my colleague, maybe let's get a response, what happened to that proposal in the national system.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Maybe my colleague, Honorable Mhlongo, read my mind, because it's just about to migrate to a new party. But that's what I wanted to say, because I didn't see anything in the brief presentation. Which says do away with the Springboks and so on. And if we want to get into that debate, we'll not finish now. I can even tell Honorable Faber that was a compromise stance by President Mandela, supported by Minister Steve Tshwete. So it is not yet time. I think what the proposal, the brief notes are saying is just that part of what is to establish a committee that will deal with national symbols and so on and so on. So I didn't see anything like that. So let us not get into that debate now. Otherwise, it becomes an emotional debate and we will not finish now.
I'm supporting what you're saying. We're coming from far with the sport. So we must also, as a committee, share these things and those that are emotional, we must be ready to put down our emotions, but that's the understanding of starting off a transformation in a very bad era. That time the ruling party made us to understand that we cannot just wipe everything. And then that compromise, that's the one that is still there. But as Honorable Mhlongo and Honorable Fabs and Honorable Sebe saying that, let's discuss this thing in another time. We'll see which time. But that's the situation. Can we give you time to respond to the members?
Thanks, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, we appreciate the way forward with regard to the issue of the colours and the emblems, etc., and the names. You know, we have the rugby teams called the Springboks, the netball teams called the Spa Proteas because Spa is the sponsor, you have the cricket team called the Proteas, the women's cricket is called the Lady Proteas, the football team is called Bafana Bafana, the women are called Banyana Banyana. So the name is one thing, the emblem, so there is a difference between name and emblem. And it's something, yes, we can take at another time in more details, where we come and prepare for a debate around this thing, well-informed debate. Madam Chair, with regard to the issue around what's in the bill in terms of the national colours, it's mostly around the awarding. I think our focus is on how our national colours are awarded, because everybody, suddenly you see a team leaving the country and someone comes and writes to the minister, my child is representing South Africa. So we said, how was the child chosen to represent South Africa? Because somewhere there must be a process. There must be a process. Well, my child has now got Protea colors. We say, how did the child get the Protea colors? Who gave it? And you find there's some competition somewhere and somebody decides you're going to now go, your parent has to pay 40,000 rand and you're going to go and play against a team in Spain or somewhere else, and hence you get a Protea color. So there needs to be a process and a system in place of how colors are awarded, because it must be something that people work for and they earn through a process. Everybody cannot be, not all of us can be a Protea. So it must be a prized possession, something that people cherish. You're representing your country and hence you become a Protea. You've given the national colors. So I think that's what we focus a lot in the bill as well. With regard to major events, Madam Chair, the regulation is quite clear. There are major events, you get federations who would write to you to say they want to host a major event, and they don't require any funding at all. It's a small event, angling competition, the World Angling Competition. In fact, even the former DG used to make the joke that he says he was invited to the World Tenpin Bowling Championships, or the World Cup of Tenpin Bowling, and he gets saying it was 16th. So, I mean, and it's a world championships, they're running with 16th. So you get, and they don't ask you for any funding. It's held in one venue, and that's a world championships. Netball, it's confined to one city. And I think in terms of the engagement, when netball started with the engagement, there was an understanding that it's going to take place in the city. The city was also keen to host it. They went to a few cities to ask them. I think Cape Town was a city that said they can host it. The provincial government said they were also willing to host it as well. And national, as a national department, when it came to us, we said, fine, it's our netball team. They've come through the ranks. We've been part of their development, etc. So, yes, it's something that we can host because it's not a major thing. It doesn't require many, many government departments to sign guarantees, etc. So based on that, you would give it to a code like netball. So if netball came and said, we don't have any money, we need a whole lot of services. We need the entire government to come in. We have to have guarantees. There are the organizing committee or the International Netball Federation expects a large profit to be made, or the International Federation expects the government of South Africa to underwrite or guarantee the shortfall of the cost of the organizing committee. You know, so those are things where you can't sign a blind check. You would say, no, you can't do that. However, you can say to them, yes, we can guarantee it based on certain facts. But obviously, there is the regulations, and different codes of sports would come and bid for events based on the regulations. Some of them would go and bid without getting government support. And they would come to say, well, they put their hand up, they want to host it. And you have to say to them, fine, what is the budget? You've now put your hand up. You've not gone through the process, so you've got to now find ways and say, how do you now fund it? Go to your sponsors, cut down on costs. Instead of having a Rolls Royce or having an X5, you must now confine it to a Conquest or whatever. So those are the things that you would need to look at, Madam Chair, in terms of putting and hosting major events. I think we've covered most of the issues, Madam Chair. If there isn't anything, we'd hear from you. Thanks a lot for the opportunity.
Honourable
Chair,
Second DG, I still don't get the question is, in your opinion, what could have been insufficient within that netball? You know, when I look at it, I might be wrong, but just like it's the government doesn't take it seriously, or it's one of the worst recognized sport, and I think it is very important as a South African that we look at it as one of the major sporting events. But the way you are explaining to me, Chairperson, it's more like the sport is not a very important sporting code, and I just don't understand why. And thank you.
I can't not respond, because I think, Madam Chair, if you look at the government, the support that we've given to netball with regard to even going and presenting the bid, our former minister herself went with the former DG, with the city of Cape Town, with the province of Western Cape, I think, I don't know if the chairperson was also part. We went and presented the bid on behalf of, with netball. We were there as a support. In addition, when the bid was won, when the announcement of the bid was being made of the winning city, it was between South Africa and New Zealand. When we heard that the president of the International Netball Federation was coming to South Africa, we already knew, you know, she won't come here to tell us that New Zealand won the bid. So obviously she's coming here, she's coming with good news. So we had to actually quickly put something together, because netball was not prepared to have, you know, an announcement ceremony. So as government, we got together to say, let's put an event together where we give her a platform so she can announce it. So we had to plan around that. So it was government who took the lead with netball to do that. In addition, now the World Cup in Liverpool, where because the bid was presented to an evaluation committee, the greater netball fraternity in the world did not see South Africa's bid. So even there, the present minister, the deputy minister at another time, you know, during the course of the World Cup, but the present minister and the former DG actually went to the Netball Congress in Liverpool and presented South Africa's bid. So the government did take the lead in netball. And even as we speak, Mr. Chairperson, Madam Chair, sorry, member, our legal services have been helping them to set up the, the organizing committee. They have all the agreements. We've been helping them with their agreements, etc. So there's a lot of support that they have from all spheres of government, but from us, from national, we've given them a lot of support, helping them with all the agreement, the heads of, the heads of terms, and also helping them to set up, because you have to set up an LOC, which is like almost a business, an organizing committee. We've helped them to also register the name, so that they have a name for the organization. So that's all the support we've given them, Mr. Chair. I know at some point it's going to come to this committee. Netball will also come and present if they haven't already. So you will see the extent of government support too. And we cannot, Madam Chair, if you look at the road we've traversed with netball as a code, they were actually really struggling a bit. They were struggling. They were in the process of being placed under administration. The property they owned was going to be liquidated. And we had to come in and say, let's see how we help them now to get out of that. So that was the first step. The second step, Madam Chair, you know, we have a Federation of the Year, and netball was one of our first Federations of the Year that got additional funding to start a Premier League, a netball Premier League. It was government who actually negotiated a sponsor that was Brutal Fruit that got the Netball Premier League going. Government negotiated the television broadcast rights for that league. It got live television. It got players for the first time who were getting paid to play in a league. And if you look at how that league has grown, I mean, once Brutal Fruit had their sponsorship came to an end. Then they got Telkom, who came in as a sponsor. And the players, if you look at the players out of the league that came out of the league, they then started getting professional netball playing, playing for professional teams in the UK, in the in New Zealand, and in Australia. So if you look at people like Bongi Msomi, you look at Kala Pretorius, they all play in the international leagues at the moment. And the performance at the World Cup, I mean, if you've seen them, I mean, they're number one in Africa, and now they're number four in the world. It's because of the support that they've been given, not only at a national level, but we've now also asked the provinces to actually make sure that they give them support as well. And through the academies, all these athletes go into the provincial academies as well, so that their skills can be developed. And that's all the support, and we're continuing to support them as well, Madam Chair.
Members, we're still having another presentation. Honourable
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not living in the past, please, but when I was here 2011, there was going to be a netball league, like you've got your Super Rugby League and etc. And this league was going to be, I think, in New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, and I don't know which other country in Europe. So this was going to actually put netball on a total different level, and it was going to become a professional era. And I remember the previous coach of Netball South Africa was in the committee room with us, and everyone was quite excited. Even our then Minister of Sport was very excited about this. I would like to know what happened, because it's just like it fell flat. I hear about our South African netball players playing in Europe, but what happened? Didn't South Africa somehow have enough sponsorship to somehow bring a professional netball team on the ground? I would just like to get up to date. As I said, I don't want to sound like the dinosaur in sport here, but I remember there was the thing that was going to happen, and it just then fell flat, it seems.
Member, I'm going to give it to Honourable Seb, but I'm suspecting some members have forgotten that President of Netball and the CEO, they were here last week, and we did discuss everything. They were happy, and but we have reflected as a committee and themselves that the only thing that we didn't do as a government is what we have done when Amabokoboko won this cup. But with the support, they are happy. But let me give Honourable Seb.
Thank you, Chair. I didn't necessarily want to call for order, but I just wanted to appeal that we're deviating from what we're discussing, because we're discussing the amendment bill. I think there will be time where we need all these briefings about the national federations. I'm just appealing. I know the information is important, but I'm just appealing. Otherwise, we will not do justice to other.
Thank you. I didn't want to say that. I'm happy that another member is trying to take back the members on about agenda, because even the president of Netball told us that they've tried all the provinces, but the other provinces didn't want to host. It was only Western Cape who agreed to host. So these honourable members, they were here in the meeting, but I'm that chairperson that I must be. No, don't even withdraw. We're giving each other information about why we're talking like that. We're not wanting to stop anyone, but they've told us you were not here acting DG and the league, that they were asked this very same question. They were saying that they've tried. You tried all other provinces. The only province agreed that the thing, the World Cup must be hosted here in Western Cape. On those final words of us all, let's give the acting DG to present the South African Institute for Drug Free Sport Amendment. I thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, if you look at the slides, I think we heard you and we started with a problem statement of why we want to amend this act. It's not a very long presentation. There are fewer things than in our main act, Madam Chair, so I'm going to hand over to Mr. Boshoff, who will take us through the amendments to the South African Institute for Drug Safety legislation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, honourable members. I must remember that, you know, the SAIDS Amendment Bill is not a prioritised one. We only have one. That is the National Sport and Recreation Amendment. So, and also, this particular bill is also still in the starting blocks. And we need to work on it to a far greater extent in the North South before we get to a stage where we actually can on a more official basis. This is just to enlighten the committee pertaining to a background synopsis, not to delve deep into this. Of course, if you remember the mandate which you gave us today, Chairperson, was to discuss, prioritize. This is just an add-on bonus, quickly, and I won't be long. What we're saying here is, is the legislative drafting process in relation to the law arose out of the need to redress the problems that have emanated from the current Principal Act, which include the following amongst others: the lack of jurisdiction to test school children involved in sport for the usage of performance enhancement substances to negate the fair play concept. That's the first issue. Second issue was the lack of transparency and openness in the appointment of the SAIDS board. In that, SASCOC, in terms of the current act, SASCOC has powers to submit the names proposed by them to be board members of the institute without any clear procedure this regard. So this bill actually, you know, addresses the shortfalls they have, creates those procedures. The exclusion also of recreational activities such as the fitness industry in the current Principal Act. Hence, the draft law now gives the Institute powers to test at random and to search and inspect the fitness industry. And lastly, the lack of any prohibition in respect of the possession and distribution of prohibited substances as proclaimed by the World Anti-Doping Association, WADA. Secondly, the provisions in relation to penalties for the failure to adhere to certain provisions. In other words, we need more bite here, we need more teeth here, which we now have catered for. Now, the objects of the draft bill, therefore, is to amend the Principal Act by catering for the testing of those learners at school who are involved in sport, but if the learner, however, is under the age of 18 years old, his or her parental consent will be required for the testing at those schools. The bill further provides for the institute with powers to enter, search, and inspect the facilities in the fitness in order to ensure that prohibited drugs are not in transit, and to test members of the fitness industry for usage of those prohibited substances to enhance performance, places like bodybuilding, as and when the need arises. In other words, at random, you can pitch up there and you can do that exercise. The draft law also establishes an inspectorate nationally to perform the duties, as mentioned above, insofar as the power to search and enter premises are concerned. The bill also makes it an offence for the suppliers and distributors to possess and distribute prohibited substances as published by the WADA. If, this is important, medical personnel are found to have prescribed these prohibited substances as proclaimed by the WADA to an athlete, they will be removed and disciplined in terms of the medical disciplinary code. In essence, such a doctor may lose his or her license to practice medicine. The bill also ensures that the institute must annually publish a list of prohibited substances in the Gazette, and that such a list must be placed on the websites of Sport and Recreation South Africa and the institute, respectively, for the public and athletes to be aware of such prohibited substances. Transparency. You need to know when you transgress. You have no excuse because it has been listed and proclaimed. Then also the bill makes provision that the CEO and the board members of the institute sign performance agreements with the institute on the issue of accountability and good governance. The draft bill regulates that the institute must annually submit a report on its activities and a financial Sport and Recreation and office. In essence, that's what the bill is all about. When you talk about, for instance, just lastly, when you talk about contravention of this particular bill and offenses, penalties, we talk about offenses that may cause a liability insofar as a fine and the equivalent of 5 to 10 years, not 20 years in this case, 5 to 10 years. With regard to any contravention pertaining to, you know, various provisions of. As I say, you know, we are still in the starting blocks, and we will definitely, we first want to get the form to be successful lodging and furthering of the aspirations of the National Sport and Recreation Amendment. That is our primary goal. So, and what will follow will be this bill, and not too far in the future, because we just want to finalize this. This bill has already been, to an extent, during the previous parliamentary session of Parliament, have been already been addressed to a certain extent. So we just need to revisit this, refine the bill, and then we're going to lodge it in a similar way that we've done with the National Sport and Recreation Amendment.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair. The bill says nothing about medication. People take medication. How are they protected? That's what things.
Okay,
thank you, Chairperson. Yes, specifically on the testing of school children. When I was reading through it, it was saying, for instance, by the school board, governing body, etc. I would just like to know the legal stance on parents, and as does the school governing body have the authority, for instance, to have a child tested, for instance, in rugby, if you play under 17 rugby, and the parent is not there. Will it be legal for the school governing body giving the go-ahead for such urine test, for instance, being taken by a specific doctor? Or will there be legal implications? Are they allowed to do that? I'd just like to know. My colleague actually, before the meeting, spoke to me about this, and it's the same like normal ugly drugs in school. Does the police have the authority to actually go and search a person's bag, school bag, for instance, for drugs? I would just like also, so Honorable Veronica was talking about that. So just then, on testing of athletes, the same question I have.
is it actually legal to do it without the parents consulting or giving the permission on that? Or will it be able to be legal if the school governing body gives the okay? I just like to get clarity on that.
Thank you. I'm suspecting I was going to comment and refer on what we are saying. I don't feel happy if you are thinking this bill is not a priority. As we're sitting here, we know that there are schools and the parents that at schools they were not allowing that the teachers and whoever that must test the kids. Whilst at school, the drugs are there. And if you can look at the teachers, the way that they are not safe, all those things when we are looking at it, is because those kids do take drugs. So when we interact with states, they've raised that they are having the problem because there's no legislation allowing them that they can randomly get the parents themselves. They don't want that. So what I wanted to say that we can't not prioritize this bill, because as a past parliament, we were experiencing, and the saints, they were having the very same problem. So we'll just appeal that it must be fast track the processes in order that this sketch of drugs, they are part of the kids in school, and now we parents, we don't allow states or the department or the principals that they must randomly check. I'm suspecting if we are carrying parents, the drugs are there at our schools. I thank you. Take to the questions of the members.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'm going to ask legal to talk about the issue of medication, but you know, there is an anti-doping, the World Association for Drug Free, the World Anti-Doping Agency, WADA. They have a anti-doping code, and every year they actually publish a list of substances, banned substances. And as an athlete, athletes also have to sign that code. So if they're going to take any medication, whether it's for flu or any other ailment, they have to ensure that they know the contents of that medication. Because if it has any banned substance, if they take it and it comes up in their drug test, and they're being tested, etc., then it means they are guilty of breaking the code. So, Madam Chair, I think by virtue of the fact that the bill aligns itself to the anti-doping code, means, you know, whatever is contained in that anti-doping code is something that athletes have to abide by, etc. The issue of school children and LGBTs, etc., Madam Chair, that has been the issue all the time, that you couldn't get into a school, you couldn't test young learners participating in sport. And if you look at many of the codes, I mean, competition is so rife. Every parent wants to see the child, you know, playing at an international level, getting the colors or representing the country, etc. So to an extent, they would indulge in illegal activities like anti-doping, etc. But there's nothing that empowers or strengthens our resolve to actually ensure that there's clean sport, and hence this legislation. Obviously, the legislation has to also align itself to the constitution of the country and the rights of people. So, as a result, we will not, I mean, by virtue of this bill, there has to be measures in place of how young school children are tested so that their rights are not violated. Where their parents, and we're saying if their parents' permission need to be sought, then that will also have to be done. So the actual implementation of the bill will be within the confines of normal policy issues, the constitution of the country, and the rights of individuals as well.
Chairperson, I'd just like to add, you know, anybody can give such an advocate on behalf of parents, because as the acting DG already described, this is a constitutional right, you know, to protect your children. It's one of the higher hierarchies pertaining to rights. So surely, you know, that's why we had the bill stipulates that if the child is below 18 years old, his parental approval and consent must be obtained, you know. But when that this is with regard to schools, but when this child is now in a gym, it's a total other story. Because why I'm saying that, because gyms can still be scrutinized by, you know, the powers of the institute to search and inspect those facilities for prohibited substances. But when it comes to schools, that's something different. So we protect the child in his school environment. That's what the Act remains there.
Yes,
Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. The question that I'm asking about the medication within the professionals that we have in our midst, we might have a doctor that would you know, give in a banned substance to a kid with ulterior motive, so that the kid or whoever doesn't, you know, progress. I mean, we have so many cases like that, and even in education, when kids are fighting for free education, and they uprise, and then they find themselves doing 8 years by being advised by their legal people to admit that they are guilty, you know, things like those happen. And now the bill, is there any other, can you also look at that, where it protects the person from even the professional that would be, you know, interacting with him or her? Thanks, Chair.
One question,
yes, Chairperson, as Mr. Borsch alluded as well, that, you know, sports has become so competitive, and if I specifically look at a sport like rugby, parents, and I can tell you, Chairperson, I've been a parent, and I've had a son that played first team rugby, and I've seen how parents, and I am quite sure of it, that there are parents that actually helping their kids with doping, so that they can achieve a certain standard, if it is with testosterone or steroids or whatever it is, or let's just say, what is the thing, growth hormone, whatever they are using. Yeah. Because for parents, for their children to become successful, they do that. Now, this is actually what I was trying to get to. If the child is under the age of 18 and his parent would not give consent, what measures would we be able to take as a sports governing body? And this is why I was asking, can the governing body not have actually a contract with a child? I'm just going to use, like, for instance, in rugby, under 17 or under 18, that if such a child play in that team, that he is obliged to be able to be tested. Because as parents are also just as guilty as actually providing that, even if it's under doctor recommendations or whatever. But the question is, How do we actually get into that? Because this is where the problem lies. I've seen on sites when we got the names, there are a lot of school children that were tested positive. You know, on substance, banned substances. So my question is, how were they tested? Did their parents give permission for them to be tested? And if my child are using something and I said, sorry, you're not testing my child, because I might be providing you, what is the situation on that? Thanks, Chair.
I'm suspecting the contribution. Want to respond?
And Chair, the issue of those learners who have been tested and they were found positive,
yeah,
etc., with the Institute of Drug Free Sport, they may have a way of dealing with it, because I know they do have an advocacy program at schools, the I Play Fair campaign. But obviously, from a point of, you know, permission and us getting in there like you would do for athletes who are over 18, there's nothing regulated. But if by consent of the teams, of the schools, etc., and the parents, they allow the testing to be done, SAIDS would go in and do it. So I would think, Madam Chair, is that, you know, there has been consensus, an agreement, and hence the testing was done.
Honourable members, we didn't want to put arts and culture for their priority what you call legislation. We're trying to avoid what it has been happening, to put so much of information and members not having its entire time. So we'll consult the department and then we'll check when can they come and do what the sports has done. We are conveying that even to you, acting DGG, saying that we'd love that they must come and tell how did you do, and it did take the whole time for us. So they must come prepared, whilst our offices, they will do a follow-up. Let me take this opportunity to thank the department and the legal advice of ours, the department, the staff and the members, and our visitors, PMG, thank you. The meeting is going. Oh, let me, honorable members, I can be like as if I'm Iron Lady Chairperson, I'm not. I took the concerns of the Friday meeting and I had to go with it to persuade the office that they must give us Wednesday. So that's why we're here today.
Amen.
I thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Amen. When I say amen,